Today's October 28th. We're doing Shmuel Aleph Perchof Chet, story of the Baalat Ov, the woman to whom Shaul appealed for news about what would happen with the Philistines. Right? David was in a real tight spot at this point because this is his second trip to the Philistines. He really is desperate. There's no place else for him to turn. Moab isn't working. Went to the Plishtim the first time and had to make himself like appear like a crazy man in order to get out of that. Remember, he got that spittle all over his beard. He went climbing the walls. And they said, nah, that's not the one they said killed the king's brother, Goliath. Nah, he must be someone with us. We have enough Meshuggahs. Let's get rid of him. And they didn't kill him. They let him live. And they just banished him. So, he can't go to a Jewish city because he'll put them in danger, right? If he helps anyone in Israel, not that they're ready to help him for that matter, by the way. Right? David knows he's a marked man. So there's really no place for him to turn. Okay? So, he goes back to the Plishtim. Remember, that's a sign that he finds his way back to the Plishtim, a sign of his utter desperation. Alright? He has been proving himself a loyal servant of the Philistines under the famous political ruse that says, or it's a political nugget how nations work. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. Right? So my enemy is Shaul, your enemy is Shaul, so let's be friends. So David is constantly despoiling enemies and bringing treasure to the king of the Philistia and saying that this is what I took from the Israelites when I killed them. Right? He doesn't know any different. He's really taking them from Ammonites, Moabites, etc. And this time, the king of the Plishtim tells David, now you will really prove how good you are and how much you're on my side. We're going to have you kill Shaul himself. Now you ever see like you have an undercover agent who goes into the drug den and then they said, and some people might think, I think he's with the police. He goes, well, prove it. We'll capture a policeman and we'll have him kill him. Right? Can you picture such a thing?
Yeah.
So this will, now we'll see if he's really a policeman or not. Okay. So David is up to this. Is the Plishtim want to really prove his value to them? We're going to capture the king of Israel and we're going to let you kill him. All right. It never gets to that because the Plishtim are called away on another mission, and Shaul himself, with the end drawing near, does this chapter 28. And it starts off by saying, Vayamas Shmuel, or Ushmuel, and Perchavet. Vibe Memahem, Eglutsu, Plishtim, Ismachane, Matzavam, Ilochem, Yisrael. Right? Vayomer Achish El David, Yodoa Tedaki, Yiti, Teitse, Bamachane, Atav, Anashecha. Now I know you're on my side. You're going to come out with me and we're going to defeat Shaul ourselves. David says, now you'll see what I can do for you if I'm on your side. And he says, you'll be by my side forever. Right? We'll see that didn't end up panning out, as I just said. Shmuel missed. Shmuel died. Shmuel is dead already. We're told that a second time because it's germane to our story. They buried him, looks like two different places. In fact, there are two places where people contend that Shmuel is buried today in Israel. But the real place is actually in Muslims revere it too. They call it Navi Samuel, Har Shmuel. The Navi, the mountain of the prophets Shmuel. Right? And it's right outside of Yerushalayim. On the way to Ramot.
Why would the Muslims have a name for it?
They did it for many places.
They revere our prophets too. You think we've been now cataloged them, now we rerun the country, so we have scores and hundreds of tombstones all over the north of Israel. Because the Muslims were like sort of guarding them all that time. I believe that in Iran, the burial of Mordechai and Esther is a shrine. Right? Okay. So it says, "V'shaul heisiris ha'ovos v'seyudonim me'haaretz." Also foreshadowing to let us know how this fits into the story at large. It says, "Shaul removed from Israel all of the ovos and yidonim." Those are two different types of the same occupation, namely calling back the dead to give advice. In English, that's called a necromancer. Necromancer. Right, you got it? It's called a seance. The punishment for attending a seance is a mitzvah lo sase. The punishment for being the one to call back the dead is skila. Seems like an overly harsh punishment for that kind of thing. Right? Punishment for witchcraft in general is not misa. But calling back the dead is misa. Let me explain. And I'm even going to turn it into a Dvar Torah, this week's Parsha. Three times in Parsha's Kedoshim, the Torah warns us not to call back the dead from their domain. Three times. Parsha's Kedoshim has only 64 psukim, and it's the highest concentration of mitzvos in the Torah. There are two psukim in Parsha's Kedoshim that have 8 mitzvos in it. Okay? So Parshas Kedoshim manages to tell us not once or twice, but three times to stay away from calling back the dead for advice. We'll learn shortly whether there is a debate amongst the Mephoshim whether it's possible to do so in the first place. What do you think? Can it be done?
Yeah.
You ever hear people swearing that they were pronounced dead and then they were on an operating table and then when they remembered coming back and seeing great-grandparents that they never met and learning things about them and talking to them and or people who have divined and they call back people and they tell them things and they talk through their mouths and right? Person is hypnotized and then they talk with a different voice as if though that person is talking through their mouth, right? So, that's the debate whether this thing is always bogus or whether it's possible to do. Right? You have to take sides. The Rambam, Radak, Rabag, Shmuel Bachofni, most of the Sephardic Mephoshim say, never done, nothing doing, this woman is a trick, she's a liar, she didn't actually quote Shmuel back in the day. We'll have our own questions about that, and how did she get it so right? Another opinion is, like Rashi, with Yosef Kara, mostly the Ashkenazi commentaries, who take it literally, who say, yes, they did indeed call back Shmuel from the dead. Okay? Get back to my point about Parshas Kedoshim. Kedoshim is about teaching the Jewish people to be a holy nation, right? And there is a danger, no matter how much you think you're holy, no matter how much you appeal to holiness, there is a danger that if you give in to one of the chief preoccupations of the ancient Near East, you will lose that Kedusha. What is that chief preoccupation? To overcome death. To reach immortality, to become like the gods by overcoming death. The Egyptians were obsessed with it. That's the way they buried their mummies and their right. Remember, they wanted to overcome death. They were so frightened by aging. Right? They were always clean-shaven and everything in their eyes was to always look as young as you possibly can. As opposed to the Torah that says, V'hadarta p'nei zokein. A zakon is a hiddur. It's a hador. It's a thing of beauty. Right? So, in the ancient world, some rituals started to prop up to demonstrate the human attempt at resolving the mystery of death. Think of it. What is milk and meat?
Rambam writes this in the Mordechai Buchan. What is the combination of milk and meat? The dominance over life and death. Milk from the animal when it's alive, meat from the animal when it's dead. And by eating them together, or even cooking them together, I am showing that I am ritualistically dominating these spheres. And the Torah says, not only do I not want you to think that you are dominating life and death, I am the author of life and death, no one else. I give you partnership with me by creating the seed to implant and create another human life. But it's not without my help. Right? And if I don't give you that ability, it won't work. Right? So don't even do the ritual that indicates such a human ability. Stay away from milk and meat together. It's a beautiful interpretation of why we don't eat milk and meat together. Got it? Okay. So, in fact, a number of the mitzvahs of the Torah, such as not drinking blood. Why does it say lo sochlu dam in the Torah? What's the lashon of the Torah? Posul parshas kedoshim. Lo sochlu al hadam. Don't eat on the blood. The Ramban also says this. This is unusual because usually the Ramban writes this kind of thing. Ramban says the ancient man used to sit around in a circle. They would slaughter an animal or a human, and then take the blood of that animal or human and pass it around in little spoons or cups for everyone to take a sip. And then they would all start to meditate and communicate with that recently slaughtered spirit and learn secrets of the other world. Right. So this was a great preoccupation of the ancient Near East, and the Torah lists a number of rituals that we are to avoid in order to not even have a shemitz, not even a bit of any possible connection to this type of framework. All right, I want you to be a holy people that doesn't behave this way. Now, listen to how Parshas Kedoshim ends. Any bar mitzvah here, Parshas Kedoshim? No? It ends beautifully about how special we are as a people before God, and it says the following.
Ani Hashem Elokeichem asher givdalti eschem min ha'amim.
I am the Lord your God, I have separated you from the nations.
Givdalti min ha'behema ha'tahora l'tmeya, uveinov ha'tamei l'tahora.
And I want you to differentiate between the kosher animal and the non-kosher animal. I want you to be holy because I've separated you from amongst the nations to behave in a holy way and to be a holy people. This is like an encapsulation of everything in Vayikra until now, first 20 chapters. And look how the parsha ends. The ish o isha ki yebohem ov o yidoni mos yumasu ve'ever yugmu of some demand bom. But if any of you call back the dead, try to gain information from those who are dead, you're dead. I'll have you killed. You get my question? What? That's all I have to insert that pasuk. Excuse me, twice already in Parshas Kedoshim, a very short parsha, 64 Pesukim is a short parsha. Twice, you already told me not to call back the dead. And then you said you're a special nation to me, I've separated you three Pesukim about how special we are, how different we are, how we're Muvdal, how we're Kadosh. And then you end up the parsha by saying, but don't call back the dead. If you call back the dead, you're dead. What a downer. The parsha ended so beautifully, and now you have to tell me about the dead.
By the way, what's the parsha right after Kedoshim? Achrei Mos Kedoshim?
What? No one knows? Maybe this were on tape. 12 years, 13 years of Jewish education, and you don't know what parsha is after Kedoshim? Yes? Good. Emor. What is the beginning of Emor? Emor la Kohanim b'nei Aharon. Tell the Kohanim. What's the first law we tell the Kohanim? Don't come to death defilement. You know the first law of Kehuna?
Kohen can't go to a cemetery if it's not a close relative, right? Now you see why. Our Kohanim are our religious functionaries.
And I don't want the Kohanim to behave like the ancient pagans, obsessed with death. I don't even want you to go to a funeral, except if it's a close relative. Right? Now you understand why. Right after Kedoshim, right after telling us a third time, don't do this necromancy, he was telling, warning our Kohanim, stay far away from death defilement. This is not your purview. It is not your province. Stay away from it. I want you to have no part of it. What's the connection to this with Parsha? Death is an extremely mysterious aspect of life. It's inevitable. We want you to approach it from a healthy standpoint. We walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. I don't know why God, this person lived to be 90, 80, 70, 40, 20, why a 10-year-old has to die. I don't know any of these things, but our way is that the time we are maybe most likely to question God, we say Yizkadal v'Yizkadash Shmerava, mentioning nothing about death. Kaddish doesn't say a single word about death. It just says, at my most vulnerable time, God, I'm going to sanctify you. Kadosh to you, ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokeinu. In this week's parasha, Esav sees a red color, and he must have it. He must have it, because to him, he sees this color every day in the field. It's the color of the blood he sheds in the field each and every day. I'm going to die. We're all going to die. Remember, according to Chazal, who just died? Avraham had just passed away, and Yaakov was cooking lentils for him. Red lentils. I'm about to die. I'm probably not even an outlived father. What is inheritance? What does a bechorah mean to me? It doesn't mean anything to me. I face death every day in the desert, in the field. Right? What's the irony of this color red, which is to Esav the color of death? What do we do with the color red?
Take it out of what we eat.
The what?
We remove it from what we eat.
Okay, that's very, very important. It's the color of blood, and we want to remove it from any reference to the fact that we killed this animal to get at its food. To get at its, the protein that we feel with is either tasty or is healthy. Right? Interesting. Rabbeinu Bechaya writes in his parish, Chazak levilti acholas hadam. Chazak levilti acholas hadam. Rabbeinu Bechaya says, an ancient man thought that blood was, drinking the blood of animals was very healthy for you. So he says, Chazak, you will be healthy, you will be strong without drinking the blood. You hear it? So, but I'm talking it's true, I think this is a good connection, but I'm thinking also of Paraduma. The ashes of a red heifer that is meant to purify death defilement. Right? You get it? What does Chazal say about the Parah Aduma? What's its most salient feature?
It's a chok.
It's a chok. It defies all logic. Precisely to this point, it's supposed to defy logic. You're not supposed to understand it. Some things. Leave it to the mysterious. Right? Albert Einstein, who was not given to just leaving to mysterious, he spoke very, very forcefully about more things being mysterious to me than the things I try to understand. And while he wasn't a particularly religious man, he did believe that mystery about the universe needs to be left to some higher power. Okay? Leave the concept of death to that higher power, because the nations that try to resolve it almost invariably ended up killing engaging in human sacrifice in order to help resolve it. Okay? So comes this, our story here that tells us that Shaul got rid of all of such divination. Shunem and Gilboa are both in the north of Israel. Gilboa is the mountainous range. Are you familiar with it? Male Gilboa, do you know where these places are? It's the very north of Israel. Right? And Shunem is also
north, and they're camping against each other. V'yar Shaul is machane plishtim, v'yira v'yicharad libo me'od. V'yira is irrational reason to fear. Right? You can all... It's actually an important emotion. It means I have to act on this. V'yicharad is pretty much almost an uncontrollable shivering and shaking. The word appears in this week's parsha. When Yitzchak heard that Esav had come in and learned of the fact that the other one must have been Yaakov, right? It says, he began to tremble. Okay. Vayishal Shaul b'Hashem v'lo anahu Hashem. What would it mean? How would Shaul ask of God? What does it mean to ask of God? Gam b'chalamos, gam b'orim, gam b'neviim. So that's the Gemara pasuk explains itself. Vayishal. Again, this week's parsha is instructive. When Rivka wanted to know what she's suffering from, what all these pains, right? Vayisro tetsua banim b'kirba, atomer imkein lamaze anochi, vatelech lidrosh et Hashem. Look at the lashon it uses here. Vayishal Shaul b'Hashem. Is there a qualitative difference between being doresh Hashem and being shoel Hashem? What do you think?
Shoel is questioning, meaning questioning something ruling is a judgment.
Okay, and what's the ratio?
What? The ratio is this down to explain, because I don't understand, but not that I'm questioning. Like,
which is a higher form of an inquiry? Which wants to know more?
More in a good way or more in a bad way?
I don't know, good or bad.
I guess the ratio wants to know.
Of course, the ratio means to dorosh, means to delve in much more than just shoel. So the Radak, take a look at the Radak Pesik Vav. Because here it says outright, Vayishal Bashem, Vayishal Shaul Bashem. And he points out, look at Pesik Vav in the Radak. Uvidivrei hayomim amar velo darash Bashem. Right? In Divrei hayomim, in Perek Yud, it says that Shaul died because of his sins, and that he went to a witch to ask what to do. Vayomas Shaul b'ma'alo asher ma'al b'Hashem al devar Hashem asher lo shamar. He didn't get rid of Amalek. He didn't wait the 7 days. V'gam lish'ol v'ov lidrosh. And he went to inquire of a necromancer and to doresh for her advice. V'lo dorash b'Hashem v'yimisehu. Radak says this, right? V'lo dorash b'Hashem. Is that true? By a sevus amluchol David ben Ishai. It says in Yirmiyahu, Shaul did not inquire of God. But look, what about those above? It says by Yishal Shaul Hashem. Can you give a close reading answer? Yirmiyahu says below Darash Hashem. What does Shmuel say? Yishal Hashem. Can we nitpick like that? Is it fair to nitpick like that? In other words, if Divrei Hayamim said, V'lo Sha'al B'Hashem, finish my sentence, then I would have an outright kasha and contradiction. Shmuel Aleph says, V'yish'al B'Hashem, Divrei Hayamim says, V'lo Darash B'Hashem, and I have a resolution, says Radak, as does the Malbim, which is, to Sha'al B'Hashem means,
God, can you tell me, why is this happening? Come on, what's going on? Darash Hashem is to sit down, maybe with candles around the room, and to meditate for an hour, and to daven and say all the Sefer Tehillim, and then sit there and say, God, I need to know this. Tell me, why is my wife suffering from Vayisro Tetsua Banim Mikirva? My Yitzchak didn't do that because Rivka didn't tell him about it, but she did. The Tehillim which Rosh is Hashem.
If you want an answer from God, you've got to prepare yourself. You've got to, you know, go get into the game. But just by Yishal Bashem, it's okay. Well, no answer. I didn't get an answer. Okay, let me go. So look at the word he uses for the Baladov. But Yishmim Ashol La'avadov. Bakshu V'yishas Baladov Ilcho Eleho. Next word. V'edrashaba. Let me doresh the girl, the woman. Why did he use the word Sha'al by God, but Doresh by her? Because by this time, he was out of the game. Look at the things. He went to Bachalamos. What would be a Chalom? Maybe God will come to me in a dream. After all, Sha'ul was also a Navi earlier in the book. Hagam Sha'ul Banavim. Gam Ba'urim. Why didn't that one work?
Kohanim were dead.
The only Kohen who had something that resembles the Urim was already with David. His name is Eviatar. Talked about him, remember? Because he had one survivor there, only one survivor of David later on in Malachim. Gam Benaviim! Why is there no Navi? Because our story started off by saying Shmuel Meis. There's no answers. No way for Shaul to find out what Hebrew kings have as an advantage over others is that they talk to God and God answers them. Incidentally, we have from the writings of many other nations that they also talk to their gods and get answers. Right? Are they true answers? Are they right? I don't know. But when a prophet of the Ammonites is told by his king, listen, you're a prophet, every king has 20, 50, or 100 prophets. Right? These are hired holy people in their each nation who are there to tell me what's going to happen in the future. Of course, nothing lasts forever, and when a prophet gets it wrong, off with his head. Right? So, he asks his prophet to sit down and speak to Chemosh, or speak to whatever god is they're worshipping at the time, and come up with an answer, what's going to happen in this battle. Prophet's heads would probably be good actuaries, probably what Bilam was, right? And size up the situation and give good advice. You follow what I'm saying? So in this case, Shaul tried also for some kinds of oracles. God, I'm ready to be a vehicle of your message. Tell me what's going to happen. But Shaul was in no condition to be a vehicle for such a thing. We talked about that, right? Okay, how Shmuel himself had changed from the earlier very crisp Nevuah, where he got it so right about how to crown the first king, but got it so wrong about how to crown the second king. Right? What happened in between is that he was mitabel. And Rashi said, Lamat, kum lamat mitabel al Shaul. Go and crown the next king. If you're mitabel, you're not going to be such a good vehicle of God. What midos do you have to be a good vehicle of God? Remember?
Simcha.
Calmness, tranquility. Certainly not atzlus. Not atzlus. Atzlus means I'm just... You have to get in the game. You have to get... Right? Okay. So nothing is answering him. So he says, okay, I know how evil Judaism considers the Bala Tov. I myself got rid of that. It shows that it was quite a popular thing. The ancient Near East was rampant with this kind of activity. And you couldn't help but assimilated areas of Judaism also giving in and getting involved in this. Right? If you can get a little one up on others by having some advice, why not? Right? By the way, when it comes to astrology, the Gemara says that it exists, it can be right, but you can undo it. Ain mazel Yisrael. Mazel just means astrological sign. When you say mazel tov or simen tov, basically what you're saying is, may the astrological sign that is passing over the earth at the time of your birth, marriage, whatever else that you're celebrating, be a good sign for you. That's what it means. Right? But the Gemara says, at the end of Pesachim, tamen tiyeh Hashem Elokecha, be pure with God, don't worry about those things. So, but it's interesting because of all these things, palm reading, physiognomy, which means face reading, some of these things are actually sanctioned in some areas of halacha. But none of them carry a death penalty.
death penalties for calling back the dead. And Shaul does it. I'd ask you this question. According to the Rambam, why does the Torah carry the death penalty for something that's bogus? Rambam says there's no such thing. What we're about to read is someone under the table saying these words. Remember, someone who goes to a person to call back the dead is usually a troubled person. Wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm. It's the only death penalty form of...
For magic.
Alternative to go off, so to speak? Or?
Yeah. A false prophet is also Chayav Nisa. It's a BVS followers. But I'm talking about like magic and...
The only one that Skila
is outlined. I mean, look, a witch who is known to be constantly practicing this thing, it's also these appeals to astrology or signs or losinachashu or salnedu, all these other things, even drinking blood, none of them carry the death penalty. Yes.
But I mean, it's the same thing like with Shabbos. Of course. Like, theoretically, on Shabbos, if you violate certain laws, you could be chayav on that type of thing. Is because if it breaks up the foundations of society, it deserves a death penalty. If everyone in the world is going to that person, this person, figure out what's going on, it's just the entire way of society.
I should know, yes. The point I'm trying to make is that of all this type of occult practices, the calling back of the dead is considered the most egregious. Yes.
Just a quick question on the difference between Darash and Shaul. What is the difference between Darash?
An etymological difference. Shaul is what time is it? Mm-hmm. Darash is, explain to me the characteristics of Mercury that make it behave in such a way. Darash is more than just it's a question.
A meaningful explanation.
Yes, Darash is to delve into. So when he asks for God, it just says Shaul. Hi, Shaul. Hi, God. Come to give me a message. No, he didn't come to me. Bye. Darash means, what do you have to do when you go to a seance? You gotta get... I've never been to one, and I've never even seen one, but actually there was a movie called Dead Again. You ever seen that movie? An old grade C movie, I think, but it's an early movie with Robin Williams. It was actually quite a good thriller. It was a science fiction kind of thing. It's called Dead Again. If you can see, it was a very, very interesting movie about necromancy. Now I'm trying to think, why did I ever see this movie? The core of the movie is something that Robert says doesn't exist. But it was really quite a fascinating film. Anyway, when they wanted to do, they did a seance in there, and when they prepare for a long time, and then they put on the candles, and they put you in a certain mood.
Does it sound like a Robin Williams movie?
He plays a kind of therapist. Anyway, we have nothing to do. It's good. But it was an interesting. Anyway, they prepare you. That's it, like a derisha. You get what I'm saying? Okay, so his guilt is that he was sha'al to God, doresh to the witch. Okay, so we move about dabei love. Hine eishes palasov be'ein dor. Okay, this is where you'll find a necromancer. He did not want her to know it's him. Right? But the fact is, sometimes you can tell who a person is by whom they want to call back. Excuse me for this exercise, but if everyone here right now could call back someone from the dead, right? Who would it be? It's probably someone you knew, right? Would you call back Franklin Roosevelt? Would you call back Ben Franklin? You call back your great aunt, who maybe you want to ask them something, maybe there's something they know that you'd like to find out, right? You're going to call back, you're going to call back the previous leader of Israel? Who was this guy who was calling back Shmuel, who just died? So he Vitrapes means he disguises himself, right? And they came to this woman and conjure up your business, to start calling back the dead, and I will tell you whom to call up. Notice she just refers to him as Shaul, not Shaul HaMelech, or even HaMelech. He just says, don't you know that Shaul has outlawed the observance? How did you even know that I'm doing this? You can get me killed! So, do you see any hints in her mind to whom she might be speaking? How can anyone swear to me that the king won't kill me if he catches me doing this? Right? I swear to you, what he really means probably, in her eyes at least, is that I swear to you I will not reveal what you're doing. A plant to see, what they call it, to see if they're who's doing it and who's still doing necromancy. Right? And as soon as she calls back, they go, okay guys, come on in, I found another one. Right? He swears to her and she accepts it that I will not you will not come to harm for this. Okay. But Tamar Isha Esmiya Alevach, so who do you want to call back? Your mother? Brother, who should I call back? Vayomer es Shmuel ha'alili. But the fact that he just says Shmuel, he doesn't say Shmuel ha'navi, she might already get the fact that he knows Shmuel. Who could possibly assure me that the king won't do anything wrong to me? Who would call up Shmuel just like that from the past to think that Shmuel is going to come for him? She can already feel that this is Shaul. Especially since Vatera Isha is Shmuel. She saw Shmuel Batizak Bekol Gadol. And she started screaming. Why did she scream? Why did she scream? That's what you're
doing.
What? Sorry, man, you know the Rashi and Mar. He came up in an unusual way. Right? Why did you deceive me and your Shaul? So I must, from here on, for the rest of this chapter, I have to divide our attention and divide our interpretations in two, to two different strands. One that says that he is really coming back from the dead, that she's really speaking to Shmuel, and one that says that everything we're reading is a hoax. And she knows it. You see, according to Rashi, who says that she really did call back Shmuel from the dead, you know why she started screaming? Because this is the first time it ever worked. I never called back anybody from the dead. I charge good money because I'm good at this. But I never really called back. But this time, it really worked because this time God did. No human being has the power of Tchias HaMeisim to call back someone from the dead. And anyone who ever thinks it was done is delusional or maybe properly delusional. What's the first thing they do to you when they think you're dead? They open up your eye bright like this and they shine in a light to see if they can detect any kind of reaction. That light, if the person is revived, is interpreted by the brain and possibly they might remember it afterwards. That light is usually, they have pictures of, I saw my great grandmother and she was surrounded by a great light. Devout Christians always see Jesus at that time, right? So it's the mind creating through the rapid eye movement or whatever is left to discern that the brain is still working at all, and they remember it afterwards, right? They have some kind of picture in their mind, a picture they saw when they were 4 years old of their great grandmother, and that picture gets in there. It stays in there. The brain remembers everything. No picture is discarded, right? And at that moment, some memory may be drawn back, and it works. Right? So whatever she was able to do in the past, this time she really did bring back Shmuel. She was quite sure that that's what she was doing. And that's what surprised her, and that's what made her think that it was Shaul. Okay, got it? Don't be afraid. Tell me what you saw. I should say Elohim. I saw something that looked like a godly figure. Olim in the Aretz. Tell me what he looked like. A man, an old looking man wearing a long coat. And he got down on the ground and he put his head to the ground. Ve'amar Shmuel al Shaul, lo ma'hir gaz tani la'alos osi. This is a great anger. Do you know what it means to disturb the rest of people on this side of the existence? And you bring me back to earth? Ve'amar Shaul tzar li ma'od. I don't know what to say, Shmuel. Plishtim nilchamim bi. The Plishtim are fighting. I see the great camp and I'm trembling. Belohim saw me alive. God has turned from me. Below Anani, he does not answer me. Od gam biyad hanavim, gam bachalomos. I tried navim, I tried chalomos. What does he not mention, by the way? Or betumim, because he's embarrassed about that. He doesn't want to say on betumim. The Gemara says this already, because he knows that Shmuel is here. Yeah, there's a good reason why the betumim aren't there to answer you, buddy. You killed them all. Ve'ekreha ve'ekreha lecha lo diemi ma'aseh. And I'm the only possible choice I had. I know I'm doing something that carries the death penalty, but I did it for the good of Klal Yisrael. I want to know what's going to happen. What should we worry? What should we do? Ma'eseh. What should we do? Now, if this is bogus, what's happening right now?
She's messing with him.
And what is she has to tell him what's going to happen tomorrow, right? If this is bogus. That means one of the possibilities of what is actually happening here is that she has someone under the table, right? She has someone under the table who is
sounding in a
show. Let me tell you what will happen.
So is someone under the table in a very hypnotizing voice who is already speaking to a man who's extremely troubled. That's usually the case of someone who calls back someone from the dead, right? And he's given to divining anything. Have you seen like a real mentalist or a hypnotist? They really can make people have a suggestion of heat, of cold, of fright. You ever seen it?
Yeah, but a lot of it is very just, they pick up on one thing, they throw out a bunch of suggestions, and then they target it on one. It's a cold reading. And then they follow the chain back.
Yeah, okay.
The person basically tells them what, you know.
And I've seen that. I've seen that. They come up to the camps, the summer camps, and they fool with the kids in like the orientation. So last year, actually, my daughter was one of the contestants that they put up there. And this is such a funny thing because he had them while they're all sleeping, and she was a good student. The fact is, if you don't want to be hypnotized, you won't be. All those guys on TV who just tap you on the shoulder and all of a sudden you drop to the floor, that's nonsense. If you don't want to be hypnotized, you're not going to be. But if you do, relax yourself and just count backwards. So she was one of those, the eight kids who gave, and she said she did what he told her to, all the suggestions. And then in the middle he said, now take off your shoes and put them on your lap. And everybody did that. And he said, now you're going to imagine that your shoes are a furry animal. It's a beautiful kitten. It's a puppy. And you see everybody else is there. They're all doing this to their shoes. And I know that since I heard this, I know my daughter hates cats and dogs. And it was very funny. Now, whether she might have still been playing along with it, she told me afterwards that she was aware, not aware, as soon as he said, imagine that your shoes are a puppy. Everybody else is so happy that she took the shoes and she threw them away. She tossed them away. And everyone was wondering, And I said, it's, I knew that she hates furry animals. Right? So it was just such an interesting thing how the suggestion continued. Anyway, he's already in. If there's a guy under the table who's going to say what's going to happen, Shaul's going to accept it. The question is, though, that if it's not God, like we suggested before, if it's God actually calling Shmuel back from the dead, so big deal. God's going to get it right. But if this is a bogus guy who's sitting under the table who works for this woman, right? Look what he says. V'yomer Shmuel, this is the bogus guy under the table saying, "Lamati sholeini v'Hashem somer alecha v'hi orecha." Why are you asking me? God has obviously turned from you, and the orecha means your enemy. God has become your enemy. V'yasa Hashem lo kasher diber biyadi. God is going to do to you, to him, meaning to you, the way he spoke in my words, through my hands. V'yikra Hashem es hamamlacha miyodecha v'yitzno l'reyecha l'dodim. God has already torn your kingdom from you, and he has given it to your friend, to your colleague, to David. Now this is the third time that Shaul has heard something like this. There's a progression of this. When Shaul didn't wait the requisite week for Shmuel, remember that? And Shmuel said, you had a chance to teach the world and your people that Eilev Arecha ve'Eilev Asusim, that they fight with warriors and they fight with kings and they fight with horses. But we defeat the Philistines with prophets. A Navi is what we need to fight battles. And you went to fight without the Navi. So you know what? Hear carefully. You will lose your kingdom. That's what he just said. You will lose your kingdom. Doesn't say to whom. After he did not wipe out Amalek, and he keeps on saying, but I did the job of Moses, Hashem. Hashem tells him, God has taken your kingdom, and he's given it to you. Re'echo atov mimecha. A friend of yours who is better than you. Here he says, the progression continues. Here he says, God has ripped your kingdom from you, and he has given it to your friend who is better than you too. And he names him now. Why is he not afraid to name him this time?
Well, this is bogus. How is it being named?
Because Rashi says that the average person by this time already knew what was going to happen.
Oh.
But I'm still troubled by that. Even if he knows, how can he have the chutzpah to talk that way to the king? What if it doesn't happen right away? It doesn't happen tomorrow. Look what he goes on. Wait a second.
You take your 50-50 shot.
I know, but what else is going on?
If the king is turning to
this
guy and God's not answering him, that means he's done.
I know, but what does the necromancer want more than anything right now?
Still alive.
And?
You're right.
Money.
For payment. I get money for this. And there's a big client here. Right? So, I mean, this is a double pushout. I think this is a problem with some therapists, is that they don't necessarily tell the person what they need to hear. They just want to tell them what they want to hear, so they keep coming back to me. Right? I want you along. As a long run, I need about 3 or 4 years to figure out what your problem is. Really? Okay, I just want to tell you, twice, the same therapist once called me and said that a long-standing couple who had been seeing them about their problems, two separate couples, who heard a shiur in Riverside Park on Pirkei Avos, resolved their marital problems by listening to that shiur. I used to give a shiur in Riverside Park years ago on Shabbos afternoon in Pirkei Avos. Two different couples. In other words, there are ways I want my money from this guy. So I would expect them to just say, okay, be careful. The Philistines have a great vast army. You know, someone who's giving this advice, if it's bogus, has to be an actuary. You know, choose your words, say it wisely, and you know. But he is so harsh with Shaul. Look what he tells him. You're going to lose your kingdom to David. I would expect Shaul to go out and slap this guy or kill him, right? What else? Kasher lo shamata b'kol Hashem. No, because Shaul was convinced he was actually talking to Shmuel. כאשר לא שמעת בכל השם ולא עשית חרונה פה בעמליק, על כן הדבר הזה עשו לך השם היום הזה. Okay, because you did not fulfill his word, not to mention this, the Abraham will say, ויתן השם גם את ישראל ימחו ביד פלישתים, ומחור אתה ובניך עמי. Tomorrow you're with me, buddy. גם את מחנה ישראל ייתן השם ביד פלישתים. The whole camp is going to fall to the Philistines. That means your kingdom, that means you, that means your sons, and you're dead tomorrow. That might help us understand why he was able to kill himself. He committed suicide. Right? He fell on the sword because he knew he was going to die. Or at least, if he feels that this is true, he knows he's going to die. So that is generally the position of Rashi, that this is really Shmuel, it's not someone under the table, and that's why Shmuel could get this so exactly right. Why whatever was told to him. Otherwise, I understand, Shmuel Bar Kofni, one of the Gaonim, says that it was a guy under the table, and if you'll ask, how could he be so on the money? He says it was an umdana. That's the word he uses. An umdana. Umdana means an assumption drawn by just about everyone in Israel that this is what was about to happen. I think that's a stretch. If we think down to saying your sons will die tomorrow, how could he be so right about that? No one would go on such a limb like that. Right? Yes?
Well, he has two things. The first thing is that if this was really someone just playing the odds, at the very least he should hedge his bets, say, no, you'll be successful, everything will be fine. Worst case scenario, it's not, he dies and he doesn't worry about it. But if he says, oh, all of you are going to die tomorrow and he's alive, yes. The first person Charles come back and see is going to be this person. He's
coming back to kill them for being about, right, he did swear to them that they won't come to harm, but still.
But I mean, after giving a prophecy like that and surviving.
Right, he's not going to give you a tip.
And the second thing would be that it's also, it could be that this guy, if he is, you know, actually not Shmuel and just trying to figure out what to say, he might just be saying, like, it's like before a game, if you do the opposite of a pump-up, you just, like you're playing the hardest game in football, whatever it is, you know you're going to lose, you go into it, you just know you're going to lose, so you're going to lose. So if this guy says, oh, you're going to die tomorrow, your kid's going to die tomorrow, so the entire time, instead of being engaged in the war, he's going to be worried about, when am I going to die, when my kid's going to die, and then eventually, because of his ineptitude, everyone's going to die.
Yeah, okay, I
but all that stuff, you know, stuff.
Also, they probably know that there's going to be a war with the Philistines, because wars have tended to happen like that. Like,
yeah, okay, everyone sees war with a hand right on the wall, okay, yeah.
So he sees the Philistines are coming, there's going to be a war, he says, like, there's probably going to be a war tomorrow, as rumor has it, and he's setting Shaul up for failure, because, hey, he wants Shaul to die, because he's kind of bad for business. And, like, in the long
that's an interesting point of it, that Shaul is, you know, the one who's been getting rid of all of me. Maybe his replacement will lighten up on us. That's interesting. Remember also that I'll just tell you that there is, in contrast to this, there's a statement in the Talmud that says, "Afilu cherev chadom munach al tzavarecha al yimna atzmacha min arachmin." Even if the sword is at your throat, don't give up hope on it. By the way, this is an amazing das that came in Bavli Atosis in Parshas Noach. It takes up a lot of the page. Das means a small little parish. It takes up a lot of the page, and it talks about some of the early crusades. Some of the early crusades that with some of the rabbis preferred to just kill a lot of children rather than give them up to the Christians. And then someone was saying, it talks about one of the rabbis saying, don't do this. Maybe the Christians will be called away. Maybe they won't take all of the children. You're killing all of them. Maybe some of them will be raised as Christians. Maybe some of them won't. Some of them will escape. And he said, no, Shaul took his life rather than be taken by the Plishtim, and we would rather take our lives than be taken by the Christians. They brought up Shaul as the Das came and says, I disagree with that reading of Shaul. Shaul was a special case, and, you know, we'll talk about why that's special when we talk about his suicide in chapter 30. But for now, we have Shmuel Bar Chof, and we have Rashi. Let me just give you two additional perushim. One is the Radak, who says it's actually Hashem. He did that also, right? Rashi just says, no, the Baal HaTov, she was calling back dead, and that's something you can do. Radak says it was God. Yes, she did call back the dead, but only this time. She never did it again. Never did it before. Yes.
Does Rashi just say that?
Yeah, that's a Rashi music.
No, Rashi says that she was in the habit of calling back the dead, and they don't have to introduce God in this.
Hold on, so she, according to Rashi, she really didn't call it the dead, because you said before that Rashi said that she was surprised because her prophecy never worked. You did see, I believe.
Is it Rashi? It's more in the realm of Shmuel Bar Chofni. Now Rashi says, no, you don't. In other words, you don't have to explain to Rashi how he got it so right. This was Shmuel.
And Shmuel Bar Chofni says that the latter reason we just said that.
Shmuel Bar Chofni was the one who said that no human being has the possibility to call back the dead, like the Rambam after him. And that what surprised her was that this time someone came back from the dead. I mean, the Radak feeds off that. But no, you know what? Shmuel Bar Chofni does not, I'm sorry. Shmuel Bar Chofni says it was bogus, it was a man under the table, and he has to explain why he got it right. He says, because Mistama people, it was a known to know that people knew that. And there's a doc that introduces that it's coming. Yes?
Is it possible that it's actually a combination that there was a person under the table, but God gave him Ruach HaKodesh so that he could say what's going to happen?
Well, yeah, I guess you have to say that, because that's exactly what happened. Not just the Noam Dinah, but yeah, I'm not saying that. But I think the most creative interpretation of all of this is Ralbach. Let's do what Ralbach writes. Ralbach says he gets the best of all the worlds. He says Shmuel was not in the picture. Try to see if you can figure out what this is. Because when I put everything on the table, they'll say, wait, this doesn't fit anything. Shmuel's not in the picture. Shmuel was never called back because no human being has the ability to do so. And God is also not in the picture. Shmuel was not called back. And it's not bogus. And it's sort of something real is happening here. How can you possibly explain this? And it fits the Ravah. It fits his philosophy. It fits his philosophical approach. He says that this woman had the capability of hypnotizing Shaul into thinking he was seeing Shmuel, and Shmuel was speaking through his own voice. This was Shaul talking. You get it? Expressing his worst fears over what's about to happen. And imposing them into a fictitious Shmuel who is talking in his own mind. And that is very plausible, because that we do see happening. Suggestions can be placed into the minds of people under hypnosis that are profound. Have you ever seen some of this? Right? I mean, sometimes you've seen it as an entertainment venue. Now they're really working on this.